Hi everybody, I'm Renee. I'm a little child. I have to actually, I guess, start by saying that I'm in a funny place in terms of I'm waiting for a COVID test. I've been sick for the past I don't know, since probably like Sunday of this last Sunday. And what do you call it? And so, you know, I mean, I'm definitely under the weather. I talked to Kaiser and they said, well, you know, I did a phone thing and then they said, well, it might just be a very severe cold, whatever. I also teach locally. I'm in Concord. I live in Pleasant Hill, but I teach in Concord. And they had I took a test there
Friday.
I guess it was Friday or Thursday. I don't remember. But anyway, so Thursday. And so I'll find out if I, you know, get to go back to teaching Monday or Tuesday, and I hope I do, and all that. So, but it's a little weird. So oddly enough, I feel bad saying this, but this event has been a bit on the back burner for me because I kept sort of having these other things be there. And in a way, I think probably a godsend because it makes it so that it's not, it's almost like I didn't have enough time to make it an egotistical thing, you know, like, oh God, it's going to be, how are people going to receive me? I was too busy worrying about dying alone, I guess you'd say, you know, the fear of abandonment. I'm going to, thank you so much, Stephen, and for your sharing. I'm going to, I have 25 years of sobriety in AA, and in AA they sometimes talk about this format of like, how was it, what happened, and what is it like now? And in some ways I'm going to do something similar to that, but I feel like with ACA, for me anyway, it's been more like, it's kind of weird to say this, but almost like an inner journey than an outer journey, as far as what ACA has meant to me. I don't know how to explain it. But I'm going to try to use that same sort of pattern, I guess. So I grew up when I was born in Texas, in El Paso, and my parents are from, we worked out in the fields. We were what I call braceros. So there was just a hell of a lot of poverty and a lot of racism and just horrific kind of crap that was part and parcel of just growing up. And it was just bad. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It was very, very difficult. Some of it were social forces, some of it was family, etc. And I feel like it may very well be that I'm sick, but I'm going to be jumping around a little bit. One of the memories that's come up a lot, and it always comes up when I get sick, in any capacity. One time when I was working out in the fields, I was a little kid, obviously. I was a very little kid. And in those days, the families go out into the fields. It's entire families. It's not just individuals. But anyway, and I have a very vivid memory of an older man. He wasn't in our family, and he fell down and sort of, you know, started to have a seizure, frothing at the mouth and stuff. And it's very, now in retrospect, as an adult, I realized he probably had heat stroke or something. I don't know. But anyway, we were just told to keep moving. We were just told, you got to keep working. You know, you just got to keep walking down the field and working. And I remember as a little kid feeling like, pardon the language, but like, holy shit, if you get sick, people are just going to leave you behind. Now I'm assuming that his family stayed with him, but we didn't. And that feeling of like being left behind is really pronounced in my life. It's just that sense of abandonment, that fear that I'll be left. And especially if I'm not well, whatever that means, whatever not well means, it's going to be, you know, it's very primal. It's I'm going to be left. And that abandonment is just super, super strong. Years, and again, this is all under the how was it or whatever, you know, what, you know, is that was reinforced a lot later when I was six and when I was 12. There were different times in my life when there were ruptures of just a super like intense ruptures. I want to talk a little bit about when I was six, just because it was so, the contrast was so stark. When I was, my parents were for, I mean, they did a fairly decent job, but one of my fondest memories of my dad was we would, you know, we were, like I said, we were, he would wake us up on like Saturday or Sunday, I don't remember, and we would watch, but in Spanish you call them caricaturas, which means cartoons. But we had the second, the house in El Paso was a dirt floor, adobe hut, no windows, two doors on either side, a dirt floor. The second house we lived in was in Tucson, Arizona, and that one did have running water, and it had windows, and it had three rooms, a bathroom, a big living room slash everybody else slept there, all the kids, and my parents' room. So I remember my dad would wake us up, and we had a TV in that room, and we would wake up in the morning, and he had this old black and white TV, you know, and the window would cut, show the light and all that stuff. Anyway, to make a long story short, he would cover because the reflection affected what you could see on TV, you know, just was messed up. He'd put a blanket over the TV, he'd stretch it back, and he'd turn around and said, it's kind of hard to explain, but he created like a tunnel, and it would be like a little shady thing kind of thing. It was really wild. And we would get to sit in the center and we would watch cartoons, you know? And he'd make us what we call ponche, punch, but it was really coffee or milkshakes or whatever with eggs and stuff. And I still remember that, and it was like heaven. I mean, I just remember now, you know, jokingly tell people it's a womb with a view or whatever, you know, I mean, it was just so great. I don't know, I just felt so happy and safe. And my dad was a big fella, so I felt like I was taken care of. I get to watch cartoons with my older brother Angel, and that's, you know, like, I don't know, it was just like heaven. I still think it's the closest to heaven. But my dad had a heart attack. He left. And my mom had to go to work by herself and work extra hours. So there was just entire days and a year when there was no food, there was nothing. And I'd come home and no one was there. And the worst part about it, I mean, all of it's horrible, but we never talked about it. And I hope you're already seeing kind of the sort of parallels about what's going on in relation to ACA, the no talk rule was super pronounced. All the while, in sixth grade, I was also getting abused by a teacher in every way possible, a female teacher. Same with that, and almost identically, that happened when I was 12 years old. And all that is to say that there was just a lot of abandonment and trauma in my life, just a hell of a lot. And the part for me that I'm learning, you know, I'm a voracious reader. I read just everything I can get my hands on. I'm a little nerdy intellectual dude. I've been blessed to be able to get a lot of education. I have a PhD. My PhD actually is in theological ethics, but it still allows me to read a hell of a lot. I'm sort of a nerdy guy. All that trauma was inside my body, and it still is in some ways. And I didn't know any way to get rid of it because we didn't have, we were told not to talk. It was just very clear. You know, even years later when I was in my 30s and I talked to my mom finally about the sexual abuse, she said, why didn't you tell me? And I didn't have the heart to tell her, well, mom, when my dad had that weird reaction to the medication and he got violent, and it was very aberrant because he had never been violent before. And then he left. Nobody in the family said anything. So where do you think I learned how not to talk about stuff? You know? And again, I'm not blaming her, but it was sort of like, the rule unspoken was don't talk about stuff. And so it just takes on all this extra power in a weird way. And so I went along, and I was very much a high achiever in many ways. I'm not good at bragging or any of that stuff, but I did a lot of great things. I was very good in school and in athletics and in just about everything I tried. But like some of us, we had that weird empty space inside, you know, that I just felt like, I don't know, like there was never going to be enough, but I don't know. It's hard to explain. And my family, like I said, it's changing now a fair amount, but there really was this rule about like not talking about stuff. And furthermore, if you showed weakness, if you showed vulnerability, it was a weakness. Like that's what was really weird. It was, I equated being vulnerable with being weak. And so it was really like, and unfortunately, I'm a very empathic, or maybe it isn't unfortunate, but I'm very empathic, I'm very sensitive and all that stuff. So, you know, it just affected me. Real quickly, I got into my two kind of compulsive behaviors are sexual pornography stuff and booze. And both of them still, I mean, I don't drink anymore, but the thing I most remember about both those relationships, if you want to use it, is that it made everything okay, kind of. It slowed everything down. It made it so that all that chaos inside of me was just, that storm inside of me was manageable, or it gave the illusion of management. And it, you know, it worked until it didn't work, right? Then I got sober. And I want to say one quick thing about in ACA, they talk a lot about family roles. And I realized that for me, part of my being trapped in my family was being trapped in the roles. And one of those things that they say, and again, I feel like I hope people are getting something from this because I feel a little scattered, but is that they talk about humor. I'm super funny guy. I've done stand-up and stuff like that. In my family, for years, I was the serious, morose, melancholy, sort of pathetic, sick guy, you know, the scapegoat, the loser, the whatever. When I left to, I grew up in Santa Rosa and then I moved to Berkeley. When I moved to Berkeley to go to college when I was 27, all the people in college knew me as this really funny guy. And when my family finally came to see me, they would all hear about this Renee that was really funny. And they're like, who the hell is that guy? And it's because they didn't see me. In my family, that part of me wasn't seen. And it took me a long time to realize that my family, it's not even a matter of whether I love them or I don't love them or anything. It's that they don't see the complete me. That's all. They don't see the complete me. And I had to sort of leave to be able to see the complete me. And by the way, that now includes what they see too. It's not like I'm rejecting everything, but it's just not complete. So I left. I did therapy. I got in recovery in Berkeley, UC Berkeley. I mean, not UC Berkeley, Berkeley. I lived in Berkeley. I went to Holy Names College, but you know, it felt great, and I'm so glad I did recovery. But then again, what ended up happening is, the tool that I was using to slow down the chaos, I took it out of the picture and the chaos came back with a vengeance. And I'm like, what the hell? And then I heard, I'm sort of showing my age here, but there was I think it was in the 90s, there was a show on PBS called Bradshaw and the Family and Bradshaw Inner Child stuff. And he really helped me see that this was all going on. And so I started to go to ACA. And what I most remember is, and I still have this feeling, that it's almost like the first meetings I went to, I think, was at Kaiser in Oakland and places like that. And I remember thinking, holy smoke, someone followed me when I was a little kid and wrote down my experience and then put it in this big red book or whatever. It was pretty weird. It was like, holy smoke, they know exactly what I felt like inside. And the fear and the terror and the despair and all that stuff. It was really weird. I had this feeling, like I said, like, man, did someone follow me in Tucson and El Paso and Santa Rosa? It's weird. Huh? And the people were very kind. They didn't make fun of me when I was sad or in grief. It's not just that I felt bad, which is, you know, life is sometimes filled with bad feelings, right? My mom died, my dad died. I mean, these are bad. They're not bad, but they're painful things. It's not that I felt pain or whatever. It's that I felt ashamed of feeling that. So I didn't want to feel that. When I came to ACA, it's almost like people just said, just go with it. They really saw all of me. And I had categorized myself as ugly things in Renee and good things in Renee. And that was just completely false.
I have 5 minutes for me.
Thanks, Harry. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was just completely false. It's just those kind of ways of seeing myself, good and bad. I mean, there's a place for that. Don't get me, my doctor is in ethics. There's a place for morality, but lots of times when I deal with feelings or my own self-sense, it's not always good or bad, maybe healthy and unhealthy, maybe something else, you know, vulnerability, I don't know. But I went to the meetings and people just, I remember hearing this in AA, but also feeling it more or as much in ACA. We'll learn to love you until you love yourself. You know, we'll love you until you learn to love yourself. That's what it was. We'll love you until you learn to love yourself. And what I came, I went to ACA and things started to happen. And so one of the things that started to happen is this reparenting. Gentleness, humor, love, and respect. It's slowly happening. It's very, very slowly happening. I'm trying to be much more gentle on myself and to sort of, whatever I'm feeling is just what's happening at the moment. By the way, it's a hit or miss. I still have a lot of shame when I'm vulnerable and scared, like I'm scared about being sick right now. And yet, you know, it's like, no, that's okay. You know, that's the way it goes. So that's one thing. Then I guess I'll end with two things that are kind of interesting. One is when I've done a lot of, and I hope this isn't, I know it's not, I've done a lot of political work with various groups. And one of the groups that I've worked with is indigenous peoples in their struggle. And I'm Catholic, and I joked about, you know, I said, oh, I'm the oppressor, I really apologize. And one of the indigenous, this one guy said something that to me, I'm gonna start crying out, but I don't hope I, but he said, no, Renee, he says, you know, you're a nice guy. He goes, listen, in our tradition, we have this thing called good medicine. There are people, no matter what tradition you're from, no matter who you are, there are people that are good medicine. That means that just being around them, you're healed. Just their presence is healing. And you're good medicine. I don't care what you are, you're good medicine. We all know that. We know good medicine people, and you're good medicine. And it's very touching to hear that, right? I mean, it's a very touching thing to hear, to have someone say that about you. So it's a matter of like taking that good medicine and applying it to myself. And I'm learning how to do that here. And then, I've been very blessed to have you all help me in that way. You be the carriers of my good medicine, or the good medicine. And then the last thing is that I'm a teacher, some of you know, and my kids, I'm single and I don't have kids and so forth. And I'm always stunned that the kids really love my presence. You know, they just really care. They want to be around me and stuff. And I've been able to be a father figure, but also just a kind presence in their lives. And don't get me wrong, they, you know, push my last button and work my last nerve. But they really help me see that. And they, it's really fun to be around them. They remind me of that little Renee too, and just like, hey, everything's good. Just, we're gonna work together here. And anyway, so to me, that's where I am now, is just learning how to self-love. Last thing is, Carl Jung said that the end of life, it's not about feeling good or bad, but about being real. And I think if nothing else, ACA offers me a path. ACA offers me a path to authenticity. So when I'm sad, I'm sad. When I'm happy, I'm happy. When I'm whatever, I'm whatever. It's about being real. That's all. And I don't think I knew how to do that until I came here, and it's an ongoing practice. So thanks.
Thank you so much, Renee. Wonderful.
Thanks, Renee.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee. That was awesome.
Renee. Awesome, Renee.
Thanks, Renee. That was great.
Thank you, Renee. Muchísimas gracias.